Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A big portion of today's episode spotlights two events that present new TV series to watch and new series creators to watch. Our first half hour checks out Series Fest, the Denver-based spectacle now in its second, hopefully last, virtual go-round. Co-founder and chief executive Randy Kleiner joins me next. Our last half hour deals with the in-person comeback of the annual Tribeca Film Festival, underway all over the Big Apple, with more TV attractions than ever before. Organizer Liza Domnitz will come by. And in between, we'll go to Promised Land, Crackle's bio series on NBA rising star John Morant to the Memphis Grizzlies. Episode 2 debuts Thursday, and we'll meet up with director Dexton DeBore later this hour. Also ahead, a classic trivia question doubleheader, new winner, followed by new question and prize. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presented on iHeart Music, Verbal, and the Amazon Music Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. And on this Monday afternoon, we welcome you wherever you are to the program all about TV's current and future. First of three episodes we are doing this week. 71 degrees and overcast at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple, where the Tribeca Film Festival is off and running since this past Wednesday, and it is going big time, especially with special TV attractions of all kinds. We'll get to more of that in about an hour with Liza Domnitz, who will join me then. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests over the next 90 minutes, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe. Here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Chat room is on for business as well. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You can get it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Speaker, tune in stream, follow the instructions, and visit me live with you. And we will have Randy Kleiner from Series Fest in Denver joining us from that Rocky Mountain capital after we get some news note quickies. A winning tune at Girls 5 Eva. Peacock will bring back its comedy about a singing group come back for season 2 next year. Another second season development, The Morning Show delivers new episodes on Apple TV Plus starting September 17th. Monica Lewinsky, yes, Monica Lewinsky, has made a first-look television production arrangement with 20th Television, that's the Disney division. Lewinsky is currently producing Impeachment. FX's new American crime story miniseries begins on September 7th. Venue, the special event ticketing TV service out to roll out before the end of this year, which we've covered in two separate segments on this program, the latest earlier this year, is using WeFunder.com to raise money. This crowdfunding drive has accumulated more than $300,000, $360,000 to be specific, so far. In other WeFunder crowdfunding news, Interactive Sports Overlay Clash TV's account is now above $760,000, and that campaign continues. HBO will launch Catch and Kill, the podcast tapes, based on Ronan Farrow's series of podcasts, July 12th. And at this hour, HBO Max expected to greenlight a reboot of the long-running ABC sitcom Perfect Strangers. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from the home of the long-running TV festival Series Fest in Denver, Colorado, co-founder and now chief executive of that venture, Randy Kleiman. Randy, welcome back.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure, Randy. So tell us how things are going, getting ready for your second virtual edition of Series Fest, and hopefully it will be the last.
I agree. You know, the virtual edition, so we launch on June 24th. We go all the way to July 11th. You know, it's bittersweet, I think, to be virtual again. Certainly, you know, we're so close to reopening here. Things are starting to reopen, but I think there's a lot of you know, we found a lot of success in our virtual festival last year, and we're really excited to build on that success. You know, one of the big things for us, we were able to reach a wider audience around the world. We don't have things like theater capacities or limitations in that way. And we really saw our audience explode. So we're looking forward to kind of building on things like that and getting out both the independent programs and our network screenings and panels out there to a bigger audience.
Before we get into what you've got cooking this year, what was the audience like last year for the first virtual go-round? How much of it was local, but how much of it was, let's say, nationally and worldwide?
Yeah, so I would say actually more was national and international. I mean, I'd say while we do have a good strong support here locally in Denver and in Colorado, that most people that tune in, we have a very industry-focused audience and an industry-savvy audience. So, you know, we really had people tuning in from all over the world, which we couldn't believe. I mean, and especially internationally, we're really able to grow our audience. So very excited to kind of tackle that again. We have more international programs than we've ever had this year. So we're really looking forward to a growth opportunity there.
Yeah, that you just raised the segue to my next question, which was how did the added audience from all over the country and around the world, how did it impact the interest level among outside Denver series creators to be worldwide series creators in terms of getting involved with the independent spirit, a competition, pilot competition, and the other competitions that Series Fest is known for?
Yeah, no, I love that question, and it's a really good one. I mean, I think we certainly saw more submissions this year internationally and have programmed more of those. I mean, the quality has just gone up so much, and in a year where a lot of production was halted and we didn't see a lot, the fact that we then got this kind of huge influx of international content, you know, was really exciting and allowed us to continue to kind of grow you know, the selections and things like that. And you know, I think part of that is the way in which the industry has changed. You know, so many of our independent, I'm talking strictly independent here, so much of our independent content, you know, has mostly been U.S. We've had, you know, a couple of gems here that have come from the international landscape where this year all of our competitions are peppered with just like incredible international series. And I think part of that is maybe because, you know, opportunities for creators to go out and have to produce their own work, you know, in a time of COVID and the pandemic when things were shut down, it just allowed them this opportunity. And that only helps to grow the marketplace and only allows for festivals like ours to keep growing. So it's really exciting.
How many entries are there this year in the main competition, the independent pilot competition? And also, is there a theme in terms of the kind of comedies or dramas or unscripted shows that the entrants are doing?
It's a great question. So I would have to look back at the exact numbers broken up. I mean, we get several hundred, you know, several hundred. We certainly saw a decrease this year in terms of the amount that we received in submissions, but not unsurprisingly. I mean, again, so much production was halted for so much of this past year, especially, you know, given where we are in June. You know, our submissions only ran through January. The world was still shut down at that point. So, you know, not a surprise. However, the quality didn't deteriorate. You know, we just really focused on, you know, really our programming, you know, really just programming unique, creative, and inspiring work. And so, you know, while we did see a decrease in submissions this year, I would say the amount of content didn't necessarily decrease. So it kind of all worked out. And I think that just only goes to show what a boom it's going to be next year, because I think people have been writing and developing. And I'm hopeful that they're going to get out there and now with the world opening back up, be able to shoot these pilots. And it's just going to make for, I can only imagine, a huge boom of submissions for next year. And then I think you asked in terms of a theme. So we have an overarching theme, not just for the independent content, but for our entire festival, which is what's next. And I think what we really saw was in the face of so much adversity, in the face of a pandemic, the resilience of creators to continuously innovate and redefine the space has just been incredible. And you know, we're really excited to showcase and celebrate the voices of stories for those breaking new ground and ask, you know, what's next and showcase who's next. On both, you know, the independent side and sort of the larger network side.
Series Fest 2021 begins on June 24th, virtually continues to July 11th, and we've got the co-founder and the chief executive of the venture, Randy Kleiner, is with us live from the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado, where it all takes place. And she joins us live this half hour on this 90-minute opening edition of the week of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Fun having with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A. That's Nueva York, where the Tribeca Film Festival is going on as we speak, with more TV attractions than ever. We'll be speaking about an hour with one of their organizers, Liza Dominic. She'll be joining me here in the Big Apple with the latest on what they are doing TV-wise. If you have a question or comment for Randy, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we are doing this week. We'll also be with you Wednesday and Friday at this hour. And coming up on Friday, Michael Eisner, the former head of Walt Disney, has got a brand new smart TV venture coming up. It's called Scrum. It's a venture that collects some of the best smart TV plumbing services that you may never have heard of, gives them a unique showcase, and you use a special payment system to catch the program that they have on. We'll have two of the key organizers of SUM with us on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. And speaking of new ventures, if you missed our episode on Friday, which featured two new ventures that I think you're going to be hearing a lot more from, the interactive game show service Win TV Network, as well as StreamFire, which is a collection of user-generated new content channels in bundle form, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. We had a fun time with the chief executives and creators of both of those new services, and I promise you, you're going to be hearing a lot more from them because of what they are up to and the early reaction to both those services. In addition, the Win TV segment is also going to be going on Win TV's own website, which is wintv.network. That's with Baron Storm. He is the head of Win TV Network, usually based in Utah. Now he's operating from Edmonton, Canada because of the pandemic. Hopefully he'll be back in the U.S. soon. You can check out that segment of Friday's episode also at Win TV's website. That's Win TV Network. Randy, tell us about all the different aspects of independent pilot competition this year, because you have a lot of ways that new series creators can be involved, everything from pitch-a-thons to a director workshop from Genreland, and I think you have some other new wrinkles too.
Absolutely. Yeah, we expanded. I mean, in terms of the independent content, and again, I want to be clear to our audience, that's independently produced and financed pilot episodes that we show here in order to create a marketplace for and a discovery platform for these creators to find a home. We have had three traditional pilot competitions that we've held. Our independent pilot competition, which features content between, 20 to 30 minutes, 45 to 60 minutes, the more traditional form content. And we do all of these from unscripted, animated, comedy, drama, dramedies. I mean, really, we show a wide variety of different types of content. We also have our digital short series competition, which is one of our fastest growing competitions with episodes under 15 minutes, and a late night competition that is more your kind of absurdist comedy and then sort of what the hell type stuff. Called our late night. And then we added a few other ways, again, really looking at this time as we were opening and all the production that stopped, we thought, what are people out there able to do? So we launched a podcast competition called Next in Queue, Spotlight on Podcasts. And we're showing four incredible podcasts on all platforms this year. We have a new one called our smartphone series and short film. Again, all series and short films that are shot on a phone or tablet. We're seeing such great creative content come from the use of phones as technology has evolved, and we want to continue to be on the forefront of finding that unique content and presenting it. We also have a new section called Pilots in Progress, where we're spotlighting a pilot that is still continuing to look for finishing funds and continuing into post-production, and we actually have executives that are giving feedback to help that pilot get to the final stages. So some really exciting stuff. And then that's kind of in the independent sphere, but as you mentioned, there's lots of ways to get involved. We've got creative workshops where those are actually live, and you're going to be in the room with some incredible people learning all different aspects of series and going through all different kind of creative workshops with those people. We've got our pitch-a-thon, which is always very popular and also live. You're going to be hearing six people pitch live to an industry panel of experts. They give live there in the room. And also, it's a great way for people to get out their ideas, get feedback on how to pitch, and also learn from that and vote, which is super exciting. We also have, kind of our bigger special events and network screenings. So we are opening with Peacock's original Epstein's Shadow, Ghislaine Maxwell, which will be followed by an in-depth look at the making of that doc series, obviously a really prime and important story that's happening right now with that with Ghislaine Maxwell's, waiting trial in November. So it's a really interesting look at her backstory, and we are doing that, broadcasting that right on opening night on June 24th. We also have great partnerships. We're doing an inside look with The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. We have a great panel on FX's Dave. We are going to show Peacock's Dr. Death, which is based off the Wondery podcast that was very popular. And we have that entire cast and creative team on a Q&A, including Joshua Jackson and many recognizable faces and talent for that. We also are showcasing CW's The Republic of Sarah, which is their new series. It's just started airing, so we're going to do a sneak of episode 3. And we have the entire cast, the whole cast on for a Q&A, which is very exciting. We also have one of our, I think, our spotlight and highlight programs to me, our Innovation Talk series. We pair one-on-one industry executives together to talk about, really have a candid conversation on the landscape and how things are evolving. And, of course, the pandemic being a big part of how things have changed and how to grow and be innovative and what's ahead. And we've got award-winning actors, Jennifer Garner. You mentioned, I think earlier, that we just announced the morning show coming back. We have Mark Duplass. He definitely talks about the morning show, as well as many other directing, producing, acting, writing series that he's working on. We have Anne Dowd, who is just wrapping the season finale of The Handmaid's Tale. If you're watching that, she's actually going to be the recipient of our inaugural Series Fest Impact Award, and really excited to be highlighting her and her work. And she's just made an indelible mark on women on and off the screen and on audiences all around the world. So very excited to have her. We also have from Issa Rae's company, the head of Issa Rae's company, Color Creative, Talitha Watkins, who talks to the CMO of Universal, Michael Moses, and just a phenomenal in-depth conversation about where we're headed, as well as Wandery's Hernan Lopez. He's the founder of Wandery. So if you're into podcasts, definitely want to check that one out. And he's a wanderpreneur, as he describes himself, and just a really incredible story, as well as YouTube's Robert Kintzel, who's the chief business officer, and to see where YouTube has gone and how that's exploded, blown up, and all the different businesses behind YouTube. As I've been doing research, I've been just so fascinated by him and can't personally wait for that conversation. And then in addition to that, we have panel discussions. So really something for everyone. I think you mentioned this. We have our Directors of Shondaland panel. We've got Debbie Allen, moderated by Tom Verica. It's just a fascinating conversation about the behind the scenes, along with Domaine Davis and Allison Liddy Brown. So really an exciting look behind, we do this in partnership with Shondaland, but all about kind of the behind the scenes. If you watch any Shonda Rhimes shows, they definitely, I'll mention a bunch of them, so it's really fun, but they talk about all their work and their careers, and they're really just dynamic and prolific, and as well as many other conversations as well.
I do want to mention The Republic of Sarah premieres tonight on the CW, and we had Jeffrey Paul King, the creator and executive producer of the show, on Tomorrow We Televised 2 weeks ago. If you missed that episode, go get to our homepage, blog.creatorcontesttelevised. I think you'll enjoy hearing Jeffrey, and I think this show, which is probably the CW's most unique show since Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Jane the Virgin, I think it's going to be a winner. I've seen some clips of it, and I think the star is also going to become very, very well known after tonight, so it should be really, really good. When it comes to podcasts, I'm wondering if a lot of the people looking at podcasts are looking at them not just as audio shows, but as potential TV shows. You mentioned Hernan Lopez. Wondery is working on like 15 of their podcasts to make them either films or TV series. We're now seeing other podcast sites come up that are actually out there to create new TV content from the podcast. What is the sense out there about podcasting and its possibility as a new source of TV shows?
I think that's a great point and thing you bring up. I mean, I think what's really interesting, and we actually have a whole panel on it called The Art of Adaptation, where we actually look at not just podcasts, but video games, podcasts, and books. I mean, I think what we're seeing are shows turned into podcasts, podcasts turned into shows. I mean, and whether that's series or films or something else. I mean, I think what we're really seeing at the end of the day is, you know, how a story begins. It's just the beginning, you know, and something that really takes fire and catches on has a life in multiple forms. And, you know, from what I understand, you know, from listening to people talk in terms of that panel as well as Hernan, you know, they are certainly taking that into, when looking at what kind of they're producing, that they're hoping that there's, you know, an evolution beyond just the podcast, that there is an opportunity to adapt it into other forms. And I think if the story's really strong and they build an audience, you know, now they already have a built-in audience. I mean, something like Peacock's Dr. Death, which again came from a Wandery podcast, it was one of their biggest podcasts Wandery's had, listened to by millions. Now the series is coming to light. You know, what a great way to already have a built-in audience, let alone, you know, how many other people you're going to get involved. to watch it. So, you know, I think it's really important. And certainly when we were looking at our independent sidebar of Next in Q Spotlight on podcast, that was something we really took into consideration, where what are these really great stories that people are out there telling and what are the opportunities for them?
You're hearing Randy Kleiner. She is the co-founder and chief executive of Series Fest 2021 edition, second virtual one in a row. That's happening starting on June 24th and going to July 11th. If you have some questions or comments for Randy in our mini minutes with her, give us a call, 646-652-2906. We'll use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. And don't forget, coming up in our next half hour, we have a brand new classic trivia segment winner. We'll tell you who that person is and the answer to our question we've posed over the last week. And then in our final half hour, before the bottom of the next hour, we will give you our new classic trivia question, and we have a brand new prize, so new that we got it in this weekend. So you may be the first to get this prize before anybody else does. So stay tuned. Our next classic trivia winner could be you. Randy, since our last conversation a year ago, we have more new networks now going on through smart TV sets and smart devices, more mega content services. You got Discovery Plus. You have HBO Max, you have Peacock, you have Prime TV from Univision Spanish, you have Paramount Plus, and you have all these new services of every shape and size going in through smart TV sets and smart devices. What's been the interest from that whole group of new services in coming to Series Fest and making program development deals with the independent talent you're showcasing?
Oh, it's been huge. I mean, it's been huge for the marketplace, huge for our independent creators. We just had one of our series from last year just debuted on HBO Max. We have another series, Everyone is Doing Great, that is now a full series on Hulu right now, created by James Lafferty and Stephen Coletti. That's on Hulu right now. I mean, we've just seen, we had another property that got picked up by Warner Brothers and is being developed at HBO Max called Brothers in the Suburbs. So it's just been an explosion, I think, for our creators and certainly tons of interest from the streaming platforms, especially because I think there's more flexibility, you know, in terms of the type of content, amount of content, the time of the content. And so they're getting really creative with the types of things they're programming, and that's only benefiting, I think, independent creators, benefiting the marketplace, and certainly benefiting us at Series Fest in terms of wanting to be that discovery platform.
Mm-hmm. Last year, you brought back one of your first winners called Up North that was picked up by Byron Allen and his entertainment studios. Do we know what's going on? I remember the panel session about that, where it was suggested because of the pandemic, the production, which was going to be here in New York, was stopped before it was about to go on. Do we know what's happening with Up North, whether or not the production is going on, and where that's going to run on Byron Allen's TV empire?
Oh, all those great questions. So I know that they are, you know, they're hoping to get back into restart production here shortly. I know that's the plan back in New York. They certainly went through the writer's room. They have all 10 episodes developed and ready to rock and roll. We at Series Fest just launched a podcast, and actually the creator of Up North, Emil Pinnock, is episode number 2, and he certainly talks about what the delay has been and gives a lot of more information on what they're heading to do. But the plan is for it to still go forward. I don't know where on Byron Allen's network that's going to live, as that's also just been sort of in delay mode. But, you know, I know there's still a lot of excitement around that property and project. And Emil is just such a fantastic creator, and he certainly won't let up, and he's got such an amazing story to tell. So, you know, anything we can do to support him, and we're hoping that they get to go back into production. I mean, so many of these productions closed down, you know, again, all over the world, but certainly here, you know, we're shut down for months and months and months, and all these places took big hits, but things are starting to come back around. So I know he's hopeful, we're hopeful, and hopefully we'll get news on that soon.
And what is the HBO Max series that is going from pilot to production?
So it's called Brother from the Suburbs. It appeared in our digital short series competition, and it got what's exciting about that is it started as a short form piece. So, you know, an episode under 15 minutes, had a great concept deck behind it, really great creator, and they are developing it into a full length. So it's series. So, you know, really more traditional. I'm not sure if those will be 30-minute or, you know, closer to 60-minute episodes yet. We're waiting to hear. But keep out on the lookout, certainly. Really exciting group of talent behind that project.
And we do want to let everybody know that, as is our custom with not only Series Fest, but all the TV festivals we cover, which feature independent pilot showcases or competitions, that as soon as we find out who the winners are, we will invite the winner in comedy, drama, unscripted to be on our show, hopefully in July. So stay tuned for that. We'll keep you posted who the winners are, by the way, in our news notes section. Randy, before we go, what's your sense about the future of the TV festival? Right now, it seems that things are in sort of a phantom zone in a way. You're on virtually. ATX is going on as we speak in Austin, Texas. Tribeca's Film Festival, which is becoming more and more of a TV festival, that's going on in person. We don't know. We know North Fork of Long Island, that will be back in person this fall. What we don't know yet is what's going on with the New York Television Festival, which didn't happen the last 2 years. We don't know if Tribeca is going to have a TV festival, a separate TV festival. We hope to find out later today, and we have Liza Dominic on our next hour. What's your sense about the future of the TV festival? Is it, do you believe, going to go back to being just in person? Will it be in person or virtual at the same time? What's your sense of where we're going?
I think it's a great question, and I can tell you from a Series Fest perspective that we plan to continue in a hybrid fashion. You know, we definitely, you know, we miss the in-person, and I think there's a lot of important connections and things that happen just by getting to meet in person and have that aspect to it. Again, the audiences we're able to reach virtually show that there's a lot of success there. So I know for us, we're planning to continue in a hybrid way, and I think what we're trying to figure out now, and I think this will be a really good test for that in many ways, season 7 for us, you know, is where the successes in the virtual are and you know, where the challenges of the virtual are that really benefit more from in person, and then how do we segment those? You know, do they happen at the same time? Do they happen at different times? I mean, those are all questions we at Series Fest are asking, and we'll really look at our audience analytics and certainly a survey and industry to sort of determine how we move forward, but absolutely in a hybrid way. I think we've learned that there is a lot of things that we can do virtually. You know, I think another great thing is we've been able to pull just lots of top-tier talent. You know, they don't have to fly out to Denver, even if they're on shoot or on set. I mean, we've got Rachel Griffiths shooting a Q&A for us on the set right now of Total Control, filming in Australia. You know, she wouldn't be able to make it out to Denver, but what a great way to include. It's a series I love, and what a great way to get her involved and included. So, you know, I think, you know, in those types of things, you know, what are those things that we benefit from being virtual? And whether that's at the festival or for us, you know, we do gear rounds, we do mentorships, we do all sorts of initiatives to support independent creators, to build a pipeline from pitch through to production. And, you know, what are the things that we've been able to do this year and grow virtually that we want to keep virtual and what makes sense in person? But for us, certainly a hybrid future.
Series Fest 2021, the second all-virtual annual edition, and hopefully the last all-virtual, that it goes back to being both virtual and in person in 2022. Anyway, this year's version begins on June 24th, runs to July 11th. For all the details with all the attractions and to keep up with all the new series content that is going to be out there and the new series creators content that's going to be showcased, go to www.seriesfest.com. It's www.seriesfest.com. Series Fest, one of the best TV festivals out there, one of the longest running too, and it's a pleasure to showcase them every year on this program. Once again, once we find out who is the winners of the independent pilot competition, best comedy, best drama, best unscripted show, we will invite the creators to be on this program. Hopefully that will happen next month. Randy Kleiner, the co-founder and chief executive of The Venture, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with this second virtual edition. The first one was sensational, hopefully more so. And thanks for being out there to really be a great showcase for the up-and-coming next generation of TV talent.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us on every year. You're such a great supporter, so thank you. We really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome, Randy. Take care. Enjoy.
Bye. Thank you.
Randy Kleiner, co-founder and organizer and chief executive of Series Fest, joining us live from Denver, the Mile High City in Colorado. More tomorrow for televised coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're looking for a very unusual tale that's sort of It's a Wonderful Life-like, how about this one called Golden Girl, where someone who is the victim of hit-and-run accidents goes up to the pearly gates and gets a chance to maybe transform some lives down here on Earth. Golden Girl is written by Ellen Hillenbrand, and that can be your new audiobook that you can get with a trial run with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you list them on any device whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Breville, etc. What you got to do is sign up at www.audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, a one-month trial of the service, health and wellness information, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And remember this, if you are already an Amazon Prime customer, make that two audiobooks you get for your trial of one, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater, great one woman and one man performances. And if you sign up to become an Amazon Audible customer during Amazon's Prime Days this week, you will save more than half off your subscription on the first 4 months of it. That's, again, if you sign up being an Audible customer during Amazon Prime Days later this week, either day, you will be able to save over half of the cost of your subscription in the first 4 months. So for all the details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up in our next half hour, we will speak with Dexton DeBore. He is the director of Promised Land, the story of budding NBA superstar, Ja Morant. And we'll find out about him and about Dexter and about this interesting show on Crackle. Plus, classic trivia question of the week, our new winner, and the correct answer to our question we posed over the last week. It's all coming up as we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to this internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Catch BTR tonight for No Filter Radio. It's as unpredictable as radio gets. That's No Filter Radio tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Televised, kicking off your new June week. Simon Amp, I'm with you live from New York. 71 degrees at the top of the hour, getting a little bit brighter here in the Big Apple as we speak. If you have questions or comments for our next guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. One of the most exciting stories right now going on in the world of professional basketball is the story of Ja Morant. 2 years ago, last year, or last season, I should say, he was the NBA Rookie of the Year. This past year, he took his team, the Memphis Grizzlies, for the first time in four seasons to the NBA playoffs. And while they didn't make it past the first round, he had a great performance in his games. And now, Ja Morant is the subject of a new series on Crackle called Promised Land. It's off to the races. First episode happened early this month. Second happens this Thursday on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Joining us live to talk about it is the director of Promised Land, Dexton DeBore. That's Dexton DeBore. Joining us live from the Sun Fun Capital of the World, Miami, Florida. Dexton, welcome in.
Hey, great. You're great to be here, Simon.
And same here. What got you interested in such a talent as Ja Morant?
You know, it was kind of a twofold thing. You know, I had this idea brewing in the back of my head for a long time around telling a story around a young player just entering the league and really being with them in a more intimate and visceral way to kind of get the true experience of what they go through. You know, you have these sort of, you know, boys essentially turning into men, you know, over the course of this time and being sort of thrust into the spotlight and playing the game at a whole nother level and all the sort of responsibilities and pressures and everything that comes with it. And I felt like we'd seen a lot of sort of reflections of that time for older guys and legends and guys that have, you know, gone on to accomplish a lot of things. But that is always sort of through a little bit of a jaded filter of, you know, revisionist history or, you know, playing memories back, you know, in a different way than they actually happened, just by human nature. And so I was into that idea of really kind of capturing a story really in real time so that the audience could experience it with them. So that was one, and that's something that had been brewing in my mind for a while, just kind of generally not connected to anyone in particular. And then Ja specifically, I had been following, you know, mainly because I was attracted to his underdog story and spirit, which kind of just resonated with me as kind of being someone that feels like I've always been the underdog. And so those two things were kind of dancing around in my head. And then one day I got a call from his agent, and I had met him fortuitously a couple years earlier and had given him some marketing advice. And we kind of hit it off and hadn't really spoken since. he saw a film that I had done a couple of years ago like a day or two earlier and called me and said, hey, that film was amazing. And I'm about to sign, you know, this young guy, Ja Morant, is there anything we could do together at some point? And I was like, all the worlds just collided. And I was like, hell yeah. Jumped on a plane, met Ja, and the rest is history.
When you call your series Promised Land, what is the promised land of pro basketball? What is the promised land that the series is referring to and Ja Morant's ability to get into that land?
Yeah, well, you know, it's really meant to be a representation of whatever it is that you dream of achieving, of reaching, you know, that place that you're aspiring to get to. And it's bigger than basketball. It could be anything, whatever it is. If you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, a movie star, a hip hop star, like whatever it is, you know, or, you know, a school teacher, you know, whatever it is, your vision, your dream, you know, really is the promised land. And, you know, for Ja, it was always making it to the NBA from such an early age, from the time he was about 5 or 6 years old. He planted that dream in his head, and he fought for it, and he reached it.
Mm-hmm. Where did he play high school ball or college ball? How did he enter the basketball world?
He literally started playing at, you know, when he was a toddler. His dad was a baller, and then he started knocking around sort of neighborhood pickup games and even some organized tournaments and stuff that his dad would still partake in, his dad and his uncle. So it started there, and then, you know, kind of worked his way up to sort of club leagues and then got more competitive, you know, and then ended up playing high school ball. But by the time he got to high school, he'd been playing for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, as your cameras were documenting his rookie year, 2019-2020, what did you notice about how mature Morant came to the point where he received the Rookie of the Year, which I think for some people did surprise his choice, the choice.
Yeah, there's two things. You know, one is that, you know, you really literally kind of see him pulling from the building blocks that his parents instilled in him, which, you know, give them a lot of credit, and anyone that knows them gives them a lot of credit because they did a fantastic job really kind of building a morally sound and solid foundation for him as a young man entering the world, and really kind of prepping him for everything that he's experienced so far. And it just shows, but you see those blocks, you know, kind of building off of one another and see him kind of get a little bit more confident, a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more sure of himself. Off the court, but you know he transitioned on the court pretty quickly as well. But you see that off the court in his personality and just sort of how he's navigating the world, especially amid all the top, you know, the twists and turns that 2020 brought for us all. And then, you know, then this idea that like he doesn't really change in terms of, you know, you see a lot of guys like, you know, with any amount of success and money and things, especially if they're not used to it and it's not part of where they came from, which is certainly his story. But none of that really impacted him. I mean, the first couple of days that I filmed him, there was this moment where we were walking across his backyard in Memphis, and it was pretty cushy. The grass was, like, pretty thick and cushy. And, you know, he was walking, and he was like, you know, I guess the guy that cuts my yard was not putting me on. I guess we do need to cut it twice a week. And the reference of it, he went on to explain that, like, that, you know, he had proposed, the lawn cutter had proposed to him to do it more than once a week because it needed it, because it grew really fast and it was really thick. And Ja, you know, was questioning it mostly because he didn't see the reason to pay to get your grass cut twice a week. And so he was being conscious of money. And it just hit me in such a way where I'm like, okay, so this 19-year-old kid who's making over $10 million a year and doesn't come from that kind of cash at all, not even close, is worried about spending, I don't know, another, let's say, you know, $7,500 a week on, you know, cutting the grass just to be conscious. And that's how his mind works. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm twice his age and make us, you know, far less money. And I'm not worried about that. So that just hit me in such a way where I was like, this kid's head is so on straight right now. It's like in the midst of all this, that's what he's worried about. And it just said a lot about his character and about where his head was at. And it just keeps going from there.
Mm-hmm. Promised Land is Crackle's new bio series about budding NBA star Ja Morant of the Memphis Grizzlies. The first episode premiered earlier this month on Crackle, which is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Second episode premieres this Thursday. We're speaking with the director of the series, Dexton DeBorey from Miami, Florida. If you have a question or comment for him, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later this half hour, we've got our newest classic trivia question winner in more than a month. You'll find out who it is and the answer that this person gave. And then in our next half hour, before we wrap up for the day, we'll give you a new classic trivia question with a new prize that just came into us this past weekend. So stay tuned, because you could be the winner of that prize. And maybe we'll have our second classic trivia question winner in 2 weeks. See what happens. So stick around. We got more to go on our special 90-minute edition of Tomorrow We Tell Michael. We are happy you aboard, whether you're catching us live on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, all present on Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Dexton, when you decide to do this series from Ja's point of view, how do you make that happen? How do you try with your cameras, with your technique, with your storyline about having it come from his point of view?
Yeah. Well, if I tell you that, man, then you're going to be able to do my job. No, I'm teasing. You know, it's sort of a very fluid and kind of back and forth process. And that for me, you know, I kind of concept everything out on paper, you know, almost as if sort of a hybrid of a script and an outline, sort of laying out the intention of what I think the story is that I'm after. And then from there, you know, kind of roll the cameras and get in there and be with it and be very present with it, and then allow the story to kind of show up. And in this case, you know, really kind of allow Ja to sort of be there for him and kind of have like a loose guide, but then get in there and let it sort of unfold the way that it does. And it, you know, it ends up being this sort of beautiful kind of dance back and forth between, you know, a concept or an idea or an intention, and then, you know, the sort of reality of what happens, and the two always sort of influence each other a little bit along the way.
And along the way, how do you earn the trust of somebody like Morant, so that he trusts you that, you know, he's going to, you know, you're going to tell my story in a very honest, unvarnished way?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it really is. It's kind of less a strategy and more of just being real and being, you know, being honest and being open. You know, I always go into any work with any athlete, you know, and especially for him and his family, by really just kind of being myself and being open and sharing with them that, you know, what my intentions are, you know, what my motivations are, why I'm there and why I feel it's important to tell their story and what I'm after. And because for me, it's always a very personal connection. You know, I don't do things that I'm just interested in or that fascinate me. I do things that I really kind of have a more of a deeper sort of soul or spiritual connection to in some way. And it's just a feeling. I can't really always explain it, but it's sort of a feeling. And, you know, when I, that first meeting that I had, you know, I'd sort of come up with a loose concept prior to meeting them, and then flew out and met Ja, and his uncle and his father were present. And just right off the bat, you know, that conversation, I listened a lot to what they had to say and, you know, what Ja had to say. And I went back and sort of infused that into my concept. And part of that was even just their family dynamic. That wasn't really originally such a big part of my take on it. because I didn't, you know, I knew of, you know, the family a bit and his father's role in training and stuff, but didn't know what kind of man he was and didn't really know what their dynamic was. But that first meeting really kind of showed me sort of, I just tapped into like the feeling that they had and how they communicated with each other, the looks they gave, the jokes they cut, you know, the conversation, the subtext, all of it. And I was fascinated by it, and it just, it hit home for me in a lot of ways, also coming from a small town, and just lots of sort of synergies that I tapped into. And when I shared that back with them, you know, it resonated. And then I just kept showing up, you know, as myself, and was very clear on sort of what my intentions were. And it just, it aligned with them. And so they trusted it.
It appears one of the intentions of Promised Land, and probably Yah Morant's intention also, is to show that often young athletes, whether it's in basketball or baseball or other sports, are often through their own adventures, if you will, or through outside adventures, put athletes into various stereotypes or various boxes. Was there a particular box that you or Morant wanted to see shattered out of you documented here?
Going into it, not so much. You know, I mean, I think that what I wanted to do was like get at the heart of what the actual experience was. And, you know, the very first night that I shot him in Miami, was the night before his very first game. So, you know, he had never officially stepped on the court of an NBA game yet. And it was just him and I, and, you know, three people on the crew, but there was no one else there. It was no one from the team, none of his handlers, his family wasn't there. It was just him and I. In fact, he came down and got me in the lobby, which unto itself was like fascinating. You know, I kept thinking like, okay, well, this won't be the case next year or a couple of years from now. You know, I'm used to working with a lot of guys, and, you know, there's always a team around and whatever. Sometimes it's massive and sometimes it's smaller, but there's always a team. And there was no team, and it was just him and I, and rolled upstairs and started shooting. But, you know, I asked him what was going through his head, you know, and, you know, and he sort of paused for a second. And I said, you know, why don't you forget that I'm here, forget, you know, my crew's here, forget there's a camera in your face. And really, you know, have that final conversation with, you know, your dad, God, you know, whoever you would have it with, have that conversation. And he just let it rip, you know, and had that conversation with us. And it was that moment where I knew that, you know, A, he was willing to share and share openly, and B, you know, that just getting that, like, you know, the thoughts that are going through his head the night before his first game is just not something you see very often. You see it rehearsed and, you know, the media training and all this other stuff, you know, from other guys for sure. But this was a kid that hadn't been through any of that, you know, and I call him kid with all due respect, but he was very young and, you know, he shared really openly. And I knew in that moment, like, okay, we have something special. And then I think, you know, what showed up, and it certainly wasn't my intention or an agenda that I had at all, and I would have had no way of knowing the stage at which it got placed on. But, you know, what I'm proud of is the stereotype that him and his family really shatter around this idea of being, you know, a really a strong role model of a family of color specifically. That is just not the stereotypes that we've seen drilled in our heads way too often and far too loudly and almost like single-handedly around Black families and what they stand for and what they represent. This particular Black family is such a powerful model of so many right and good things and quality aspects of character, and I think it just came at a time that we need that.
You're hearing Dexon DeBore. He's the director of Promised Land, the new Crackle Bio series on NBA star Ja Morant, who in his second season led his team, the Memphis Grizzlies, for the first time in four seasons to the NBA playoffs, where they distinguished themselves with the first round. They unfortunately were eliminated. but they did themselves very well. And Moran, by the way, had a terrific individual performance in his games. And Dex is with us for a few more minutes here this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised Live from Miami, Florida. You have a question or comment for him? Don't be shy. Pick up that phone and use your voice, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Dex, it sounds like sports documentaries are your thing in trade. Do you see doing these kind of documentaries with a special series as like a metaphor for life in general?
Yes. Yeah, it's great that you asked that. You know, people ask me if I've always been a sports fan, and, you know, the truth is no. You know, I've become a sports fan through my work, but, you know, originally, you know, I was attracted to sports, you know, in general as really kind of something, you know, it was a tool or a mechanism. I started running and lifting weights at a young age when I was 13, because before that I was sort of out of shape and chubby and shamed a lot and made fun of and kind of a lost and messed up little kid. And I found, you know, working out and the discipline of training and even the effects that it did to me physically, but also mentally and emotionally, very, very rewarding. And in fact, I'd say in many ways it kind of saved my life. And that was my entry point and became sort of a guiding force in my life. And so when I got older and became creative and started writing and started making things, you know, sports was always like a deep, fundamental, you know, really rich kind of metaphor, yeah, for life in general. And I think many of the athletes that I've worked with appreciate the fact that, like, you know, I have a philosophical connection and a spiritual sort of take on it. And it's far less like I'm coming at it as a fan. You know, I never enter it. You know, it was amazing to meet and work with Michael Jordan, but I never went into it like I'm the biggest fan on the planet. I was like, here's a man I respect for what he's done. I resonate with what he's done, with his mindset, with who he is as a person, and what he's done in sports, but the impact that he's actually had in a much larger way. That was how I entered it. And I think that, you know, that has taken me really far and gained me a lot of trust and sort of mutual respect with a lot of guys that I've worked with and allowed me to do what I do.
What's been the reaction from Crackle's audience so far to the first episode, and what's John Morant's reaction been so far?
So the first three are out. The first three came out on June 3rd, and then the second three come out on June 17th. But it's been phenomenal. I mean, it's been through the roof. I don't know what the exact numbers are. They're still gathering them, but Crackle says that it has done far better than they imagined and hoped. You know, I've gotten a chance to read a number of reviews, you know, completely third party that I have no relationship with and, you know, never even spoken to, that really kind of nailed the nuances and the subtext and the idiosyncrasies of filmmaking and storytelling in a way that has really surprised me, because that's not always the case. You know, sometimes, you know, people don't totally get what you were after, and they might enjoy it or not enjoy it or whatever, but they can't analyze it to the detail of what you were actually going for as an artist. And I feel like that actually has been pretty captured pretty well, you know, by critics, which is, I'm certainly blessed and grateful for that to be the case. And Ja himself, you know, he texted me after he watched, you know, the first three, which, you know, was before it came out on Crackle. Obviously he had seen it before, and said he had cried and was super proud of it. So that, you know, that moment right there was probably as valuable as any, because that was super important to me, and it came through.
Do you, is there any possibility that you could do a sequel on the second season, especially given how Morant did with the Grizzlies, getting them into the NBA playoffs this year?
Well, the series was always concepted to be an ongoing thing, and so we are in talks to do a second season. It won't be on Ja. It'll be on another subject. But my work with Ja and his family is certainly not done. We will be back at some point for more, for sure.
Well, again, congratulations to John Morant for getting the Rookie of the Year last year and this year, taking his team, the Memphis Grizzlies, to the first round of the NBA playoffs. His performance individually in those games was tremendous. And I have a hunch that next year the Grizzlies are going to be even in better shape to make a run at more than just the first round of the playoffs in 2022. And, Dexton, while you wait to hear whether we do a second season of Promised Land for Crackle and Wend, any other TV projects you're working on?
Yeah, quite a few. I mean, I'm in Miami at the moment. I'm shooting a series with Will Smith called Best Shape of My Life, which is I can't say too much about it other than it starts off as him going on sort of a fitness transformation, but it turns out to be something so much more. And I think it's going to blow the audience away when we deliver that to the world.
And where is that running? What service is it going to be running on?
It's going to be a YouTube original.
Great. All right, Promised Land. You can check out the first few episodes now on Crackle, available on most smart TV sets and smart devices. Second batch of episodes premieres this Thursday. And if you haven't seen it, do. It's a really terrific series. By the way, in addition to knowing about John Morant, there's also some very interesting interviews about him and about the life of a pro basketball player in general, from Carmelo Anthony, the NBA All-Star, former WNBA MVP Aja Wilson, and many, many more. It's a really terrific story about a really incredible talent who is making his mark very fast in the NBA. Promised Land, again on Crackle. And for more details about the series online, go to www.crackle.com. It's www.crackle.com. Again, the second batch of episodes of Promised Land premieres on Crackle this Thursday. Dexton DeBore, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on the reaction so far, and all the very best to you with this series and hopefully much, much more on television.
Thank you very much, man. It was my pleasure to be here.
It was a pleasure to have you, Dexton, all the way. Take care and all the very best, and all the greatest to John Morant and his family.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Dexton DeBore joining us live from Miami, Florida this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week, first of two segments today. And our first segment deals with our first winner in more than a month. It's Dana Levitt from New York, New York. Dana, congratulations. We got your winning entry this weekend, and that's because with your winning entry, which we're going to say in a moment, you're going to win a pair of Babylon 5 soundtracks with music by the series composer of that long-running science fiction series, Christopher Frank. And the first season of Departures, the award-winning series on Outdoor Life Network, that was also carried on National Geographic channels around the world. The question that Dana answered was this. According to the theme song from Maud, Lady Godiva was what? The answer, a freedom rider. And, of course, the Maud theme song came from that wonderful series on CBS with Bea Arthur in the title role. The music was by Dave Grusin. The lyrics by Alan and Marilyn Bergman. And it was sung by Donnie Hathaway. So, again, it was Lady Godiva was a freedom rider, according to the theme music from Maud. So, again, congratulations to Dana Levitt from New York, New York. Prize is going to be going out the way tomorrow. And coming up for our next half hour, brand-new classic trivia question, brand-new prize in play, so new that we got to be in where I am this past weekend. And it's a goodie. So stay tuned. Let's see if we can get two weekly winners in a row starting this afternoon. All right? So stay tuned because our next classic trivia winner could be you. And if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's what Dana Levitt did. That's why she won. So when you hear the question and you know the answer, email me. First person to get the correct answer emailed with their name and address gets the prize. So stay tuned next half hour because our next winner could be you. This is Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program about TV's current and future. First of three episodes we are doing this week. We are back Wednesday and Friday at this very hour. And coming up on Friday, we'll showcase Strum. It's the brand new venture for smart TV sets and devices from former Walt Disney head Michael Eisner. We will have two of the key people involved with this venture coming your way Friday with other guests as well. 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Coming up in addition to our new classic trivia question, when we come back, we're going live to the Tribeca Film Festival, which is off to the races in its first in-person series since the pandemic. And we'll talk with the organizer of the TV side of the festival, Liza Domnitz. We will speak with her here in the Big Apple after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com, together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, BTR is your home for Real Talk Roundtable. Sky's the limit for what gets talked on Real Talk Roundtable. That's tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best VTR always comes your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised this Monday, June afternoon. And we welcome those of you just joining us wherever you are at the top of the hour. Simon, I'm with you from Nueva York. 71 degrees at the top of the hour. The sun is now finally coming out. It was raining earlier, overcast earlier, and now sun is out, which is really great. We have one more guest coming your way this half hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and call with a question or comment. It's 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. As always, the number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone, no problem. Use our chat room, ready and waiting for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline at any time. So use the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, tune in screen, follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. In our first half hour, last hour, we had Randy Kleiner from Series Fest, the popular Denver independent TV showcase that's been growing and growing over these years from Denver to Mile High City. They're doing their second all-virtual event starting on June 24th. But right now here in New York, we've got the Tribeca Film Festival, and it's back in business in person since last Wednesday with the screening of In the Heights that premiered in theaters around the country and on HBO Max the following day. Well, the Tribeca Film Festival is off to the races, a lot more to come, and much, much more in the world of new TV series and also new TV series pilots and opportunities for series creators to get into the game. And joining us live for more about the TV side of Tribeca Film Festival 2021, joining me here in the Big Apple right now is organizer Liza Donis. Liza, welcome in.
For having me.
So first of all, update us on the activity out there. How are people doing seeing the Tribeca Film Festival is back and in person all over the city?
People are excited, and we're excited. Yeah, we, like you mentioned, we kicked off last Wednesday night with the world premiere of In the Heights. We screened the film in all 5 boroughs simultaneously, and it was just a really incredible experience to bring people back together. All of our screening venues are outdoors this year, so we're able to sort of bring in the magic of the city to the viewing experience. And since Wednesday night, we've been, like you said, we kicked off, and we've had several full days of screenings and immersive experiences and podcast events and conversations and TV events. So it's definitely back, and the vibe from New Yorkers has been really lovely, lots of goodwill. I think people are very, very relieved and excited to be back together and able to enjoy stories together again.
And Liza, when it comes to television, there is definitely a bigger vibe than ever before about showcasing not only new TV series, but also people who want to break in the industry by running new series pilots, by doing all sorts of special competitions and so forth. What's it been like to put the TV side of the fest together this year?
It's always fun. So I program feature films as well as TV and then our indie episodic section. And the TV side of it is always just a joy to do. You know, TV has been part of Tribeca for many years. I think we may have screened the finale of Friends way back in the day, so it's sort of part of our DNA for quite a while now. And it's just what's interesting about the TV section is that it's sort of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for an audience member to come and see a show before it breaks and becomes super popular. And all of our TV events have a panel conversation following the screening with cast and creative team. So it's a really cool opportunity just to sort of be, to have that one-on-one conversation, if you will, with these series creators and cast members and ask questions and be the first to see some series that will go on to very big things.
In fact, one of the series has gone on to very big things since you screened it several years ago as a pilot was Two Sentence Horror Stories, the horror anthology involving diversity of color both in front of and behind the camera on the CW. It's now gone into its second season recently. It's been renewed for a third. It's getting a lot of attention all over the place. It's one of the great examples of what Tribeca can do for a possible new TV series.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we had Vera Miao with us at Tribeca, and to premiere that feels like a long time ago, but I guess it was probably about 4 years ago. That series was part of a section that's called just our indie episodic section. So, you know, series that are looking for acquisition, looking for distribution, looking for network streamers, et cetera. And it's a section that's very near and dear to my heart. We've had a lot of really interesting creators come through it over the years. And it's, you know, like I said, a place to go where you want to see, maybe you want to try to catch like the next high maintenance or the next Broad City, what have you. That's the place to do it.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to Tribeca now because some very interesting wrinkles this year you're bringing to that section in 2021. But first, how do you determine which new television series, whether they are on a broadcast network, a cable network, a Netflix, an Amazon, a Paramount Plus, an HBO Max, et cetera, how do you determine which new series get your showcase?
So I program the TV section with our festival director, Kara Cusimano, and essentially we're just looking for things that we know that an audience will really respond to, and that might be for a number of reasons. You know, we like to have a mix of documentary and narrative series, and we like to have sort of a breadth of representation from networks and streamers, because we know that New York is a really interesting audience and they have all differing kinds of tastes. And so we like to try to cater to them. And it's also just things that we think will strike a chord with people because they strike a chord with us as programmers. For instance, this year we have shows from Peacock, from Disney Plus, from the OWN network, from Stars, AMC. I mean, it's a pretty wide breadth of representation. I guess my answer is a little vague, but it's just sort of as programmers, we learn what we know will do well with an audience, and what we hear sort of in the cultural ether that is coming up and people are excited about. And if we have the opportunity to program those types of series, we jump on them. For instance, a couple of years ago, we world premiered Handmaid's Tale before it actually came out on Hulu. We world premiered Chernobyl from HBO. Those were really hotly anticipated series, and we just felt really fortunate that we could, you know, screen them for an audience before they actually hit the air.
Is there anything like that with this year's festival?
There's a lot. We just, the other night, world premiered Blindspotting from Stars, which is a series based on the feature film that came out, I think, 2 years ago. And it's created by Rafael Casal and David Diggs. And David is from Hamilton, of course. And it picks up, like, 8-9 months after the film ends. And it's just a really beautiful mix of timely conversations about police reform, about police violence, about racial tension, but it's all told through the lens of spoken word, dance, music. It takes place in Oakland, California, and it's starring Jasmine Cephas Jones, who's also from Hamilton, who was in Blindspotting, but they sort of pivoted the story away from Raphael and David's characters, who were the stars of the feature, and now the series is focused on Jasmine's character, and it's incredibly well done. It has Helen Hunt in it as well, and it's just a wild ride, and we had a great time premiering it the other night.
And Liza, update people, the show premiered last night on Stars. It already has a 100% review from RottenTomatoes.com. Daniel Feinberg, the critic of the Howard Reporter, hosts the TV's Top 5 podcast with his partner Leslie Goldberg, gave the film a great review. And I hear that the reaction at Tribeca on Friday night was really terrific. I also want to point out that we were hoping to have last Wednesday a live, on-the-fly presentation of our show with David Diggs. We had mentioned it on Tuesday. It looked like it was going to be in the cards. And as I mentioned on our show this past Friday, because of a late-breaking conflict, things had to get changed around. There was a possibility that we could do the interview with David this weekend. And unfortunately, it did not come off. So we apologize for that. So does the publicity people behind that effort. And we do want to let you know that, David, if you're listening to this, Your invite is still open. We'd love to have you on this program anytime you like. I was a big fan of Blind Spotting. You should, of course, know that David was the Tony-winning co-star of Hamilton 5 years ago. He did the Disney Plus version of it last year. And he's also the co-star of Snowpiercer, which will be going to the third season next year on TNT. It's their most popular drama in years, and it's turned out to be a terrific adaptation of that movie. So, David, open invite for you. We'd love to have you on. Any other examples of something that's about to happen, something about to break that in television is going to be showcasing?
Yeah, I mean, tonight we're world premiering Dr. Death from Peacock. It's a Peacock original limited series. It's based on a podcast from Wondery that has something like 50 million listens. And it's starring Joshua Jackson, Alec Baldwin, Christian Slater, Anna Sophia Robb, Grace Gummer. It's EP'd and written and showrun by Patrick McManus. And it's a pretty terrifying, pretty juicy story about a spine surgeon, a true story of a spine surgeon in Dallas who was essentially maiming his patients in surgery during his surgeries, and his victims sort of piled up one by one, and two doctors played by Alec Baldwin and Christian Slater sort of go on a hunt to sort of, you know, nail him and make sure he stops doing what he's doing. It's really well done. It's kind of it's often an uncomfortable watch. There are some pretty intense surgery scenes, but obviously with that cast, it's just a really entertaining watch. So I would definitely mention that one as something that I assume will do very, very well.
We're speaking with Liza Domnitz. She is one of the organizers of the annual Tribeca Film Festival, which after a year's absence because of the coronavirus pandemic is now back live all over New York City, and it continues to into this weekend. And Liza joins me here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I've been with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. 71 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Liza, ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04Band. Coming up before we leave you at the bottom of the hour, our new classic trivia question and prize. If you know the answer, you could become our second classic trivia winner in a row. So stay tuned. That person could be you. Let's go back to Tribeca now. How many pilots this year are going to show, and what was it like to pick them?
So do you mean for our indie episodic section?
Right, for the indie episodic, yeah.
Yeah, so we have four projects this year, and it was a difficult selection process. Our overall program is slightly reduced because of, you know, our reduced number of venues, since we're an outdoor festival this year. So it was a tough, it's always very difficult decisions, but this was particularly a tough year. And they are incredibly different kinds of projects. They're all narrative, and there is a project called In the Cards, which is about a psychic, a sort of street psychic in New York, and she's sort of scamming and looking for her next mark, really kinetic, super well done, very New York. We have a piece called Viral from two young filmmakers who actually just graduated from Northwestern University. It's called Viral, and it's a story about two young people, again, just out of college, who sort of fall into TikToking, and it does strange things to their bodies and to their minds. And they, it's very funny and very young, fresh, incredibly stylized, super quick cut editing. It's very impressive. We have a series called If I'm Alive Next Week. It's a comedy web series from Jennifer Morrison and Robbie Sublette. And it stars the great Joyce Van Patten as a woman who is in her 80s and has to move back in with her adult children after her boyfriend gets ill. And she is to say she's a character is an understatement. She's sort of a cantankerous, very independent, sassy woman. And she kind of, drives her family crazy. It is incredibly entertaining and very, very funny. And then last, we have a great sort of hybrid documentary narrative series called An Uncandid Portrait from Rick Gomez and Steve Zahn, the great actor season. And these are individual episodes that are about artists, and sort of goes into the quirks and nuances of these artists. Steve Zahn plays a photographer in one episode. Rosemary DeWitt plays a modern dance choreographer in another. They're very beautifully shot episodes, sort of in a documentary now type style. Mm-hmm. And they actually are, but they're quite poignant, lovely pieces, even amidst the sort of absurdity of some of the things that they're talking about with artists. So those are the four pilots that we selected for the Tribeca Now section, and we just world premiered all of them yesterday afternoon, but they are available on Tribeca, our Tribeca virtual platform called Tribeca at Home. So if people are interested in checking those out, which I really recommend they do, you can find them there.
And like we did with the Series Fest people, we'll see later on if we can get one or two of those Tribeca Now possibilities to come on our program later this month or in July. So we will offer that invitation as well. And we should point out that there is at least one short subject that is already being developed as a TV series. We understand there's one about the circus that is being developed by FX as a series. So we're trying to get the people behind that project also to come on our program. But I also understand that this year, Liza, there's some other ways that series creators can be involved. I think there's a creators market that's being done for the first time, and then maybe a couple of other things that you're instituting this year.
Yeah, so this isn't the first time we've done it. We've done it for about, I think this is our fifth year. So essentially it's an opportunity where for not only episodic, you know, TV creators, but filmmakers and storytellers from sort of across all of the sections at Tribeca. So essentially we invite around 30 creator teams from the world of features, episodic, from the immersive world, from the podcasting world, and even this year our brand new is some games creators because we have a game section at Tribeca. And over the course of 2 days, we're doing this virtually, we invite a whole bunch of industry to come and take pitch meetings with these creators. So they have an opportunity to maybe pitch a project that they are having at the festival that they would like to further develop into something bigger or something completely new. So it's a really amazing opportunity for these creators. It's essentially like getting a year's worth of meetings with people in 2 days. And so we're going to kick that off tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And it's a whole lot of meetings, about 400 plus meetings over the course of 2 days. So we're really excited about that and hope that, you know, future collaborations can come from these meetings. And we're excited to hear about those down the line.
Mm-hmm. And again, if any of those come to fruition with a promo development deal with a television service, again, the creators are very welcome to come on our program. I should point out also today, earlier today, Tribeca announced a deal with Epic Games where they're going to showcase the technology that they use for the Mandalorian television series on Disney Plus and other TV series, which is really amazing, the ability for other people to use that technology. So keep your eye on that because that may introduce some interactive television to the proceedings also. One thing I wanted to ask also, same thing with Randy Kleiner at Series Fest. Are you getting more interest in terms of the television side of things from the Peacocks, the HBO Maxes, the Paramount Pluses, Prime TV from Univision, Discovery Plus, in terms of looking at not only the TV shows but also the short subjects and even the narratives, the feature films, in terms of developing in a TV series?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these companies sort of further develop their networks and their streaming sites. We definitely keep tabs on them and have conversations throughout the year to make sure we know what's coming out, what's coming down the pipeline, and so we can snatch them up. I mean, for instance, like I mentioned earlier, the Peacock Dr. Death, and I'm trying to think what else we have. We have Disney Plus. We're doing a double header here at the festival next weekend, a kids double feature called with two shows, The Mysterious Benedict Society and Monsters at Work. We are absolutely intrigued by the content that's coming out of those particular companies, and we always invite them to come and hear the pitches at the market that I just mentioned, because we hope that we can sort of help along the careers of the people that are at the festival. And they've all been eager to sit down with these creators. And so, it's there's so much opportunity out there now. So it makes our job a little easier when we're programming the TV section, because it's just that much more we get to look at.
We have a few more minutes with Liza Dominic. She's one of the organizers of the Tribeca Film Festival, and it's becoming more and more a TV festival, too. And the current festival, which started this past Wednesday, it runs into this weekend. So if you have a question or comment, ring it in fast, Simon Apple at 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04, at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, classic trivia question, our new one coming up in a few minutes. Stay tuned. You could be our next winner. Liza, the last couple of years before the pandemic hit last year, Tribeca did a separate TV festival where you could have more pilots showcased, more showcase of new series, that kind of thing. Where do things stand now that the pandemic looks like it's on its last legs here in the Big Apple and probably all of New York State, given what Governor Cuomo had to say today, that we will see the return of the Tribeca TV festival this fall?
That's a good question, and I don't exactly have a straight answer for you. I mean, we love the Tribeca TV festival. We started this a few years ago when, just as I was mentioning earlier, that we just realized there was such a breadth of, you know, content out there, series, that we couldn't fit them all into the main festival. And also just with the expanded sort of calendar of premieres these days, you know, it's not sort of the traditional, you know, shows come out at two times each year. You know, things are obviously coming out constantly in a steady stream. So we decided to create this offshoot festival for a long weekend in the fall where we could just premiere more works and have more conversations. And like you said, things got, you know, a bit askew with the pandemic. So I think that we're going to get through the next week of the festival and see where we're at. You know, I think our plan at the very least is to continue doing some outdoor screenings here in New York through the summer and into the fall. And that's also a really good opportunity to, you know, hopefully premiere some new TV series, not just films, but TV series too. And then we'll see where we are. And if it's, if we're at a place in New York where we can, you know, bring people back inside and maybe do another TV festival. We'd love to do it. It's always super fun, and people get very excited about it and sort of come out in droves. So fingers crossed we can figure that out.
Well, personal thought, I hope so, especially if the New York TV festival does not come back. And for those of you, by the way, who have been checking our shows of late, we did a show recently, which was basically a commentary about what is going on with the New York Television Festival, which was off the radar screen for the last 2 years. Last one was in 2018. It's been around for nearly 15 years. We have invited Terrence Gray and Aaron Day, the head of the festival, to come on this program and find, tell us what is going on. Will it come back? Why is it not coming back? And so on and so forth. So that invitation still stands. And personally, I think it would be a real shame if this is the first year in a decade and a half that there is no television festival based here in New York. There is Norfolk in Long Island. And so I hope that, in a way, Tribeca TV Festival can come back, because it would really be a shame if New York, which was really the birthplace of the TV festival as we know it, like Series Fest in Denver, like ATX, which is virtual right now in Austin, Texas, like Catalyst in Des Moines, Iowa, and so forth, if the birthplace of these festivals, which has done so much for the TV industry, does not happen here in the Big Apple. So hopefully let's make it happen.
Yeah.
And New York TV Festival, whatever you got to do to get back in shape and on the in person, please do so. And again, we'd love to have you on, Aaron and Terrence. Whenever you're ready, please give us a call. It'd be great. Before we go, any other big TV events coming up, let's say, this week before the weekend?
Yeah, tomorrow night we have the world premiere of Reservation Dogs. This is an FX series. It is created by Sterling Harjo, and it's EP'd by Taika Waititi. It's really, really amazing half-hour comedy that follows four indigenous teenagers in rural Oklahoma. They're a tight-knit team, and they are attempting to sort of scrounge up enough money so that they can leave Oklahoma and go to California. It is very, very smartly written, really sharp, and so well acted by this cast of all Indigenous actors. I can't wait to see more of it. We're showing the first episode and having a conversation afterwards with Sterling and the cast members. I really encourage people to check that one out. It's called Reservation Dogs. I mentioned the...
And it will be premiering on FX this fall. And unfortunately, we have to leave the conversation there. The Tribeca Film Festival continues with a lot of great TV activity to come as we speak. It's running all weekend long and all weekend long here in the Big Apple at various outdoor venues, including Metrotech in Brooklyn, which is near where I am. And congratulating the Metrotech for being one of the sites to make it happen. For more details about the festival, all the festival online, here's where you go, www.TribecaFilm.com. It's www.TribecaFilm.com. And once again, we will invite at least one or two of the Tribeca Now participants to be on a future episode of this program. And we're also going to try to tell you about the circus short that's being developed for FX, too. We have already got an invite to those folks to be on. Liza Dominic, one of the great organizers of the Tribeca Film Festival. First of all, congratulations to you and everybody at the Tribeca Film Festival, Robert De Niro, Jane Rosenthal, et cetera, for bringing this back to New York. It's one of the first big events since this pandemic is lifting. We are kicking this pandemic to kingdom come, and it's really great to see this festival. On its 20th year, by the way, get the great public attention it's gotten so far, and it's only going to get bigger.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's great to talk about the festival, and I hope people can come out.
Absolutely. They will, for sure, Liza. Take care. All the greatest.
Thank you.
Liza Dominic, organizer of the Tribeca Film Festival, joining me here in the Big Apple. Again, for all details, it's www.TribecaFilm.com. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. And the first with the correct answer, our brand-new prize just came in, the Shark Week 2021 pocketbook from Discovery, Inc. It's in orange, got lots of sharks all over it. It's really dynamite, very, very handy, and it could be yours if you know the answer to this question. And the question is in tribute to the great actor Ned Beatty of Deliverance and network fame, who passed away yesterday at the age of 83. Ned Beatty, for four seasons, was one of the gang on Homicide: Life on the Street, one of the most acclaimed television series of the 1990s on NBC. It was on from 1993 to 1999. Here's the question. Who played the police commander on Homicide: Life on the Street? Who played the police commander on Homicide: Life on the Street? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to include your name and address. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win the new Shark Week 2021 pocketbook from Discovery, Inc. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post a question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. So get involved, play in for the win, because, as always, you get all the very best if you do. Again, we'll be back with you Wednesday and Friday at the Free TV Eastern New Pacific. And coming up on Friday, we'll have people from the new Michael Eisner venture, Scrum, coming to smart TV sets and smart TV devices soon. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast all over the place. And remember, we'd like to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We do respond to your emails and thoughts within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants. Not say those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and other students of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toth, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, head of content. Co-founders Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we televised, brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. But tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Thanks to all of our guests these last 90 minutes. Back on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're keeping now on Wednesday, please make it safe and great, because we are living this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.